You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max. Powered by Righteous Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 25 of the Firefighters Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Serra. Well, there's not much going on in the country right now, so I guess I'll just skip over all that. But seriously, thanks for tuning in and taking a break from the sideshow that our country has become. For this week's roll call, I'd like to recognize NYPD Detective Luis Alvarez, who passed away 3 years ago yesterday. If you don't know who Louis is, you should Google him. He spoke at the congressional hearing back in June of 2019 alongside John Stewart and our friend Lila and a few other people. Louis was in the middle of his chemo treatments. I believe he was supposed to get treatment that day, but skipped it so he can go down and testify. I think he had 67 or so treatments for his cancers, but he was there. And he spoke softly, but he spoke strongly, and you know, he got his point across. Louis was a good dude. I got to know him towards the end, but he was always had a smile on his face, a lot like Ray, and he knew he had a job to do, and he did it much like Ray did, with class and grace. So this week's roll call is dedicated to him. Reminds me of a story I'd like to share. Louis was given the key to the city a few months after he passed away by Mayor de Blasio. It was a small ceremony, but, you know, our team was there, John Stewart, you know, a few cameras, but it wasn't very much publicized. The reason I bring this up is because that day I was actually accused of stolen valor for the first time in my life. And I'd like to share that story. You know, firefighters out there, maybe you young guys out there can take some notes. So anyway, as the story goes, I went to the ceremony in my dress uniform, of course, out of respect for Louis. And for some reason, I don't know what was going on. I couldn't get an Uber to get me back to Staten Island. The roads were shut down or the bridges or something. So I ended up taking the ferry. One of the guys dropped me off at the ferry. And, you know, I was having a bad day. You know, this was back in 2019 when I really still couldn't walk very far. But I figured I'd hop on the train, and I had my dad picking me up at the station on the other end. So, you know, I figured I'd be all right. When I got to Great Kills in Staten Island, which was my stop, my father was on the corner and I was making my way there. And if you know Great Kills, you know that there's a bar right there. I won't say its name. But I walked past the bar and I had my headphones in and I'm, you know, hobbling along with my cane. And all of a sudden I get shoved very hard from behind. So I quickly turn around and I pop out my headphones and there's this 20-something-year-old dude, very angry, screaming at me. And I just said, "What's up, man?" And he said, "Who the fuck are you?" And I said, "Well, who the fuck are you?" And he said, "What's with that bullshit uniform you're wearing?" And I said, "What makes my uniform bullshit?" And he said, "Well, where's your tie?" I was like, "Well, I took it off." And then he gets a little closer to me and starts examining. He's like, "Well, where's your hat?" And I stuck it in his face. And I was like, "What's your problem, man?" He's like, "Well, why are you walking around pretending to be a fireman?" And I'm like, "Who the fuck are you?" So now I proceed to light this kid up. I hit him with everything you could possibly say to a junior firefighter. And then I could see he took a step back and started looking at the medals on my chest. And I said, "You know what these are for?" And he said, "Yeah." And then he took another step back. I said, "Who are you? What's your name?" And he wouldn't tell me. All he would tell me is that his name was Pete. and he told me where he works, which of course, when I got home, it took me all 5 minutes to make a phone call and find out who he was. But he was angry and for some reason decided to assault me. And when I asked him why, he said, well, you know, on 9/11, I saw some people walking around in uniforms and I didn't think they were legitimate. And I said, well, do you really think I would put on this uniform and walk around Great Kills at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday? For what purpose? And then I said, you know, something like, you know, you saw me struggling down the street and you come out here and you hit me. You should have come out here and asked me if I needed help. And then he started apologizing up and down, asked me if he could buy me a drink, told me he has problems, he has a drinking problem. And then I proceeded to tell him, well, I don't give a fuck, because if you have a drinking problem, call the counseling unit. But it's embarrassing that you're out here hitting another fireman in the street. So anyway, you know, there's more to the story, but, you know, I made that phone call, found out who he was, got in touch with a senior man, and I let them take care of it. But really, I would say if you're going to accuse somebody of something, you should be sure. Anyway, so that's what I think of, unfortunately, when I think of that beautiful tribute to Louis when he got the key to the city. But anyway, this week, I'm bringing the NAV back on to bring in some positivity and just to catch up with him and see what he's got going on. So let's get into it. Here he is, the NAV.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Firefighters Podcast. Joining me this week is our previous guest, the NAV. NAV, hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
I wanted to have Nav on. He's been retired a while now. What about a year now?
Yeah, a little over a year. February 4th, 2021. February 4th, 2021.
All right. So you've had a little more time to reflect. So maybe we'll get some different answers this time. We'll see. I wanted to start out with last week was the anniversary of the Father's Day fire. And I know your firehouse was affected. Were you working there when the fire happened, or were you still in?
No. So when the Father's Day fire happened, I was in my my 14 weeks. And just as a reminder, what the 14 weeks was is there were three classes, mine and Rob's being two of them, where out of the academy, they sent us to a temporary house for 7 weeks in an engine, 7 weeks in a truck. And then the way it was supposed to go, the way it went for my class was we went back to the fire, to the academy for 3 weeks, and then we got our permanent assignments. So when I was in my 14-week assignment, that was when Father's Day happened. And then about a month later, I was assigned to Engine 292, sharing quarters with Rescue 4. And Rescue 4, of course, lost two of the three guys that, died on Father's Day.
So, yeah. So that, I mean, I kind of know what that's like to walk into a firehouse after somebody just died. But what was the feel like?
I was as nervous as can be. You know, once I found out, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to the houses, you know, and then sure enough, I got there. They were very, very welcoming and everything, without a doubt. You know, I was the probie coming in. They were, you know, it was a great house. It is a great house. And but they were definitely reeling. I mean, the two guys that died in that house were two of like the senior leaders of the house. There was Harry Ford, who was like a legend. To this day, he's still a legend, you know. And then Brian Fahey was also, you know, I forget if they were like one and two. You know, Harry was definitely the senior man. I forget if Brian was number two, but anyway, he was up there. So the house was floored. You know, the guys were, you know, some guys were just in a depression, you know, walking around and stuff like that. You know, and I had a guy, you know, I won't say his name, but as soon as I walked to the door, telling me to get out as soon as I can, you know, everything else, you know, not meanly saying it, like, you know, it's like, you know, just get out as soon as you can, you know, and stuff. And, you know, he was just, you know, traumatized and everything, you know.
Right. Well, then 9/11 happened like 2 months later. So I always wondered that, like those houses where, I mean, I think, died like a couple of weeks before 9/11, right?
So Mike, you know, who was also in my class, Mike Arumba, you know, so that was really, well, I guess my first line of duty desk was Father's Day, and then came Mike Arumba, you know, and the guys actually, you know, had no idea, of course, having no idea what was about to happen with 9/11. But, you know, they were very great. They knew that I didn't know Mike very well. I knew him, of course, but I didn't know him very well. But the, you know, the guys, including the guy that told me to get out as soon as I can, you know, he was very, you know, supportive and everything. He's, you know, because they had just gone through it, you know, on a greater level, because they obviously knew the guys who died a lot better than I knew Mike, you know. Right. But so anyways,
so what did he say something to you after that? Did you guys actually have a conversation?
That's a little,
I guess fucked up is the right word. Like he tells you to get out. And then a guy,
when he said get out, he was talking, he meant get out of that house. Like he was saying, he said, you know, go somewhere where you're like, you know, there was some, you know what happens? There's always misplaced anger, you know, like after, I mean, as you saw after 9/11, how much infighting and stuff like that was going on just from guys dealing with the stress and everything else and their own emotions and everything else, they misplaced the anger. And that was kind of, you know, he was the guy that I'm speaking of was upset with the engine for whatever reason, he was just like, you know, get out of this shit house, you know, you go to a good house and all this other stuff. That's more what it was like that, but which was totally false. I mean, the engine 292 was a great spot to be in and I got great work there. I got taught good stuff there. You know, there was absolutely nothing wrong with the house. It was just this one guy's, PTSD or whatever you want to call it. That was, right. You know, misplaced. Well,
that happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of those guys floating around who don't deal with,
And then it was 9/11. So, and you know, one of like the stories that always sticks with me is how, you know, Brian Hickey was the captain of Rescue 4 and, you know, he was still out from the Father's Day fire where he'd gotten injured and it was his first 24 back to work. He was working overtime and, you know, he got put full duty, he got an overtime tour and, I don't want to mess up. I think it was in Rescue 2. I can't remember now, but anyway, he was working in a different company. He wasn't in Rescue 4. And of course he wound up dying, you know, so it was, you know, so here it is. They got they finally getting their captain back and who was beloved. I mean, he was one of the most loved people ever. And he, you know, of course didn't survive, but, anyways, it was just like then going into as you lived through yourself in 136 and 287, you know, just a series of funerals and families, families of the people that died and whatnot. So it was just, you know, it just became that became the all consuming thing. Father's Day, sadly, it's not to say that it was forgotten, but it was certainly like, not the focus anymore, you know, even though those guys deserve to be, you know, thought about and revered for, you know, eternally, you know, but, and they are, you know, don't get me wrong, they are, but it's just that, you know, things change when something as drastically dramatic as 9/11 happens, you know, so.
Yeah, right. I mean, ordinarily losing five guys in 6 months or 7 months would have been the worst years in the history of the job. And then,
right. Yeah. It's crazy.
You know, I don't know, man. So now that you've been retired a little longer, I've noticed you've been writing a lot more music, but
yeah.
You know, how are you feeling about, have you processed, you know, a lot of the shit that you, dealt with, or is that what your music's about?
Sometimes it is, you know, for sure. It's hard to say. People ask that, you know, like, you understand on a different level because you are in the same boat as me. You've just been out longer than me, you know, but it's hard to say, like, you know, cause you don't like feel yourself, you know, so to speak, processing, you know, you are processing, you don't feel it happening. You know what I mean? Right. So I guess the answer is yes, you know, yes and no, maybe, because like I'll go through periods where I'll be thinking, you know, at one point I was doing, I was working on a memoir, so to, you know, like to, for lack of a better word, you know, like about my time in the fire department. And I kind of got a little bit, I don't know what the word is, disheartened or whatever. And I stopped working on it. I know I'm going to get back to it, you know, but just in general, about myself, and I've always been a writer. I've always loved to write. I've always, you know, had my goofy, forms of art that I pursue and, you know, on my own, you know, not like in any kind of, professional way or whatever. And so just having the time now where I can really put more time into it has been a gift. You know, I mean, I love it, you know, and so therefore, as you speak about the songs, you know, it's been fun for me to be able to get better at playing the guitar. So, because I've always written poems and stories and everything else. Mm-hmm. So just transitioning them to songs has been kind of, I think of it as a vehicle for the words, because for me, it's always the words come first, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's been great. As far as, is it a processing of the, I'm sure everything that we do and everything that we say kind of comes from everything that brought us to that point, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what creates the filter, right? It's
yeah,
all the bullshit. But yes. I wonder if, I mean, you ended up doing 20 years, even though you didn't necessarily leave on your own terms.
Yeah.
Seems like you were ready to leave.
I definitely was at that point. You know,
yeah, I wonder if that makes a difference, because
I think it does. I think that people that get out, you know, like you didn't really get out on your terms. You know, you were all of a sudden, it was like, oh, you know, you're hurt. You're having problems. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you're not going back to work. You know, like you weren't looking for it. You know, me, I was, you know, I was very likely going to get out of 20 years regardless at that point, mainly because of the age that my kids were at. And, you know, I'm repeating stuff that you already know, but, but you know, my son was going to be starting middle school the following year. My daughter was going to be starting high school the following year. So it was a good line for if we were going to leave New York, you know, and, you know, change schools and stuff. And so that's what we did. So that was always, you know, in our thoughts is like one possible plan. And then as it was getting close, you know, now we're going through COVID and everything else. And you know, just in general, just, it was, you know, the city is, I hate to say it, and it's been falling apart. You know, it's, you know, the, you know, these iconic businesses and restaurants and stuff just getting put out of business by the greed of the landlords and the laws that, you know, allow them to be greedy like that. Cause you know, they're like, yeah, we're gonna double your rent on your lease. And if you don't want it, great, because we're going to get tons of tax benefits to not have a business in there or whatever else, you know?
Right.
So the city felt, you know, the city was losing its heart and soul a little bit, you know? And, so for me, you know, I was a little burned out anyway. And it's also just dealing with the shit, dealing with internal politics, external politics, I hate to use the word politics because I hate talking about politics, but but in general, like, when I say internal politics, it's like, you know, every firehouse has its own politics.
And
you know, we have to deal with each other and we love each other, but sometimes we can't stand each other and all that, you know? Right. And so, you know, I was ready, you know, I was definitely ready. And then, you know, so when I started having the issues with my lungs, you know, in one sense, the timing was good. You know, I mean, it's like, I'm sorry that it happened, you know, but if I was going to get out, you know, anyway, then, and I started having issues, I guess it was probably a couple of years prior to my getting out that it started to really creep up and it just started increasing or whatever. But you know, if it was going to happen, I'm glad it happened late and not early, you know.
Yeah, right.
I'd rather be able to run marathons and stuff like that right now. But,
I mean, those stories, like you just said about Captain Hickey, and I could think of like, Captain Stackpole and guys like that who came back from these injuries only to be killed shortly thereafter. You know, I think about that a lot myself, just because like you, you know, I was dealing with all the health issues and hiding it and trying to keep my job. And then a fucking building fell on my head and pretty much, you know, I wouldn't say ruined my life, but certainly altered it drastically, know, when it didn't have to happen. So I guess that's why I still haven't found peace with it. You know, I certainly not leaving on my own terms has caused me issues, but also the way I got out, like, you know how it is. You just mentioned it, the firehouse politics, right? Yeah. People see a 33-year-old guy getting out. And I'm sure you heard it, you know, a lot of guys had a lot of things to say and a lot of people thinking it was bullshit, which unfortunately now a lot of those people are dealing with the health issues and calling me for help, which is fun. Yeah.
You definitely have become a resident expert on a lot of the things that guys need help with. So like, you know, you are certainly a commodity, you know.
I don't begrudge anybody for stupid shit they probably said in the kitchen and, you know, things that got back to me. But you know, I certainly haven't forgotten, you know, but I'm happy to help anybody who needs help. And I think a lot of people, firemen will never admit it or say it, but I think a lot of people realized, maybe they should have shut the fuck up. But it's something you just said, also what you just said too about the city. I had an experience recently. I went to a concert with my wife, and I could not believe what a shithole the city is. Like, you can't walk down the street without five people with no shirts on and their pants falling off, begging you for money with joints hanging out of their mouth. Like, it's, I don't know, trying not to be hyperbolic, but I was disgusted, you know, and, yeah. And it only exacerbated by my unresolved issues with my health and my injuries, because I kind of felt like, what the fuck did I do it for? Like, right. This is the city that I gave all this to. Yeah. And this is what it's become. Like, I don't know.
But I mean,
better ways to look at it, but
I know what you mean. I definitely
hard do not to feel that way. You know,
it is. And I think for you though, you know, like that kind of what did I do it for or whatever. It's like, it's in your case, it's almost become less about the city itself and more about how you can help the people, because you have, I mean, you know, whether you give yourself credit or not, you know, you have been an enormous, enormous help for so many people, you know, just with your, you know, work alone, that when you were going down to Congress all the time and stuff, but even after that, just, you know, you're always like, you never care if it's a person that you has done you wrong in the past or whatever, you're always there to help. That's the thing. You know, people are like, I speak to the podcast. If you don't know Rob is one of the greatest helpers, you know, and sources of information that people like me could have, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, but you know, sometimes it's hard to feel that way, yeah. You know? All right. Well, let's talk about some happier stuff. So if you haven't followed the NAV yet, you should, but the NAV has been performing publicly for the first time. So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, I know running into fires is nerve wracking, right? Especially some of the ones that you've been to. What would you say the difference is between that and getting up on stage in front of people and spilling your soul?
That's a good question. You know, when you're getting ready to go into a fire, you know, like one of the things for me, and I think for a lot of firemen that I worried about more than the idea of like, oh, wait a second, there's fire that can actually burn me to death or smoke that can suffocate me to death or whatever. I never really got, you know, that never really bothered me. You know, it wasn't that I was so brave. I was just like foolhardy or whatever. But the idea of, I hope I don't fuck up. That's the thing that always, you know, is the thing that I had the most fear about. I just don't want to fuck up. I don't want to, you know, like, you know, both cause anybody else any danger, but also I don't want to look bad in front of the other and stuff like that. So that kind of a fear is very strong. You know, so what I've been doing is I've been going to these open mics. It's not like I've been, you know, like getting I'm getting called by all these venues and they're like, hey, Rich, we need you to come. You know, it's just open mics I've been doing so far. But but I get great feedback. Actually, it's been pretty cool. And but like every single time, you know, I'm just waiting for my turn and I'm just like, okay, God, I hope I don't forget the words. I hope I don't, you know, miss strum or whatever. I hope, you know, my voice doesn't crack like I'm going through puberty or something, you know, right. You know, so it's like that. That's where the comparable fears are, you know?
Right. It's like a different type of nervousness, right?
Yeah.
I remember the first time I did a live TV interview and it was like 5:30 in the morning and I was sitting in what seemed like a closet at Fox News. Down in Washington, staring at a hole in the wall. And I'm like, I was like shaking, you know, once we started talking, I was like, I'd rather run into a fire than sit here and stare at this hole in the wall, you know, waiting to say something. I don't know. You're right though. That fear of fucking up publicly is worse than the.
Because there's also like a team aspect to firefighting too. Yeah. So, you know, whereas like, you know, when you're up, like it's like in front of a live camera or on a stage with a few people watching or whatever, you're like, it's just you, you know, like the spotlight's on you, you know? So it's, you know.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the spotlight's on you at a fire though.
That's true too, especially especially when you fuck up, the thing that we worry about, right? Then the spotlight's really on you. You know, you heard about Rich, you know.
Or when you're on the tip of the aerial having trouble getting a window open, and the chief has some choice words for you on the radio.
Yeah.
Which I won't repeat. Anyway, it was pretty funny. He recently retired, I heard too, but maybe we'll get him on.
I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about right there.
What was his name? The guy in the first division, McFadden, I think. Is that his name?
Oh, no,
I forgot. That's not it.
Yeah.
I don't know. He had some choice words for me on the tip of an aerial one day. Oh, okay, I actually started laughing while I was up there, you know? It was pretty funny. All right, so where are we here? I don't want to keep you all morning. I know Nav just closed on a new house, so
yeah.
As you can see, he never got around to decorating the house that he's been living in.
What are you talking about? That's I got a whiteboard calendar.
All right. Well, wasn't that there the last time? You had something hanging.
Yeah, there. That's my finest art. You know.
All right.
At least in this.
I don't keep a calendar anymore. Got nothing to write up there. So you have any songs? Let's hear a song and then I want to dissect it. So give me something.
Okay.
Let's hear something that you had planned and then let's talk about it.
So, All right. Sounds good. All right. So in that case, I was a little bit unsure which song, I should pick to play, you know? So this one is kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better way, I'm going to call it my signature song right now, because it's a good song about life and stuff. People seem to like it, you know, and I'm trying to get the guitar onto this too, so you can see my blazing fingers and everything else, you know. So I had a few different ones I was going to choose from. I'll tell you real quick. I have this one called The Sounds of Summertime, which I think is a really nice song. It's just like a happy little song or whatever. And then I got this other one called Folk Song, which I was thinking about doing, which I thought might be a little too long though, because it's like, you know, it's not that long, you know, but it's anyways. And anyway, then there's this one. It's called In Stride. So I hope you can hear me through my computer, you know.
You're good, man.
All right, cool. Someday when I'm 55, I may lose my faculties, or I may get a tooth disease, or by then I might have fleas. But if I fall apart, oh please, I hope I'll keep my love. But if I fall apart, oh please, I hope I'll keep my memories. I hope at least I'll keep my memories. I've lost my hair, I've lost my lungs, but I still have a gifted tongue for singing about life and love. And I ain't going nowhere, son. I'm older now, I've hit my stride. I'm not exactly a fine wine, but thank God I'm still alive. Thank God I'm still alive. I've been around a time or two, but goddamn, a girl like you only comes around once in a lifetime. Now here I am in my stride, keeping pace with. I'm sorry.
That is so ironic that you lost it while you were in your stride.
I know, right? And usually I get that song perfectly. You know what it is? You're making me nervous, Rob. You're making me nervous.
I'm making you nervous?
No. I'm making me nervous. Is that something that we're going to be allowed to cut out, or am I stuck with that?
I don't know. I might have to leave it in there now.
All right. Do you want me to start over, or should I do a different one?
Keep going, man. It's cool. Do people get it?
Yeah. By the way, that's one of my big things also. When I'm doing that, I always say to myself, if I fuck up, I'm just going to keep playing. Cause I hate that idea of starting and stopping. But anyway, that's what I just did. So I'm going to start from the beginning, if that's cool. Do we got time for that?
Whatever you want to do, bro. All right. You got the floor. Let's go.
All right.
Don't fuck it up though.
Someday when I'm 55, I may lose my faculties, or I may get a tooth disease, or by then I might have fleas. But if I fall apart, oh please, I hope I'll keep my memories. I hope at least I'll keep my memories. I've lost my hair, I've lost my lungs, but I still have a gifted tongue for singing about life and love, and I ain't going nowhere. I'm older now, I've hit my stride. I'm not exactly a fine wine, but thank God I'm still alive. Thank God I'm still alive. I've been around a time or two, but goddamn, a girl like you only comes around once in a lifetime. Now here I am in my stride with a fine girl at my side. That's you and me in stride, walking through our lives side by side. Back when I was 22, I drank away my faculties. I didn't know what I would be by the time that I reached 33. Years to come were all hazy with choices that I couldn't see, and that was just fine with me. I was 22 and in my stride, not belted in for any ride, just wandering throughout my mind, knowing I had time on my side. I wrote this song at 51, and looking back on all I've done, I've had a daughter and a son, and been myself to everyone. I've glided through the horizon and fought my way into the sun. You're damn right, I'm proud of all I've done. Now here I am, still in my stride, keeping pace with my own life, with arms up for this wild ride, until it takes me to the other side. Thank you.
Much better the second time.
Second time was a little better.
All right, man. Well, good luck with everything. Thanks right, again for your song.
My song and a half.
Your song and a half. But I like that one, man. That's a good one.
Thanks. Yeah.
Sadly,
I never mess that one up because I probably played it more than anything else. And then
that's what I'm saying. It's ironic to mess up a song called In My Stride. I just think it's perfect nav.
Yeah, but
all right, bro. Well, good luck.
All right, thanks, Rob.
Hopefully next season we'll have you back on and you can bring us some more navisms and some more
stories.
But take care of yourself out there, bro.
You too, Rob. So it's always good to see your face, good to hear your voice and all that, man. So thank you.
All right, man. Keep in touch.
Will do.
Hey guys, it's Frankie, and welcome back to Frankie's Firehouse Feast. Today we will be making lemon berry firecracker cake. For this recipe, you will need cooking spray, 1 15-ounce box of white cake mix, 1 3-ounce package of instant lemon pudding mix, 4 large eggs, 1/2 cup of vegetable oil, 1 cup plus 1 tablespoon or more of lukewarm water, 1/4 cup of raspberry jam, 7 or more drops of red gel food coloring divided, 1/4 cup of blueberry jam, 7 or more drops of blue gel food coloring divided, 3 cups of powdered sugar, 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, and 1/4 cup of red, white, and blue sprinkles. First, preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Then lightly coat a bundt pan with cooking spray. In a large bowl, whisk cake mix and lemon pudding mix to combine. Add eggs, oil, and 1 cup of lukewarm water to the mix. Using an electric mixer on medium-high speed, beat until smooth, about 1 minute. Scrape 1 cup of lemon batter into a medium bowl. Then stir raspberry jam and 5 drops of red food coloring into the batter until it's combined. Add more food coloring, a drop at a time, if a deeper red color is desired. Scrape another 1 cup lemon batter into another medium bowl. Stir blueberry jam and 5 drops of blue food coloring into the batter until combined. Add more food coloring, a drop at a time, if a deeper blue color is desired. Pour red batter into bottom of prepared pan. Then pour remaining lemon batter over the red batter and pour blue batter over the lemon batter. Next, bake until a tester is inserted and the center comes out clean for 40 to 45 minutes. Let it cool in a pan for 15 minutes, then turn it out onto a wire rack and let it cool completely. Meanwhile, in a medium bowl, whisk powdered sugar, lemon juice, and 1 tablespoon of lukewarm water, adding more water drop by drop if necessary, until thick and smooth and mixture is a lava-like consistency. Scoop a heaping 1/4 cup of white glaze into a small bowl and stir in 2 drops of red food coloring. Scoop another heaping 1/4 cup white glaze into another small bowl and stir in 2 drops of blue food coloring. Drizzle white, then blue, then red glaze all over the cake. Scatter sprinkles over the top. Let the glaze set about 30 minutes before slicing. Happy 4th of July!
Thank you, Frankie. Thanks for Nav for coming on and keeping your stride. Thanks for making your music, man. I hope everyone takes some time to listen to some of Nav's songs because I think they're pretty cool and I think they have a good message. 4th of July is next week. I hope everyone takes the time to reflect and appreciate the fact that, you know, whatever your thoughts or feelings are on this country, it's still a pretty nice place to live. And as we got into in this interview, stop worrying about being right all the time. You know, you can be right, but still be an asshole. You know, you could be right, but not be righteous. It happens all the time. I see it where someone might be right about something and then they quickly, through their behavior, you know, they become wrong. I've said this to my friends, you know, I agree with you, but the way you're acting, I don't agree with. So, you know, why don't we try a little bit to stop worrying about that. Stop worrying about being right. Stop worrying about forcing other people to think the way you do because it's just not going to happen. And it shouldn't even matter. You know, stop worrying about what you think the founding fathers would have wanted. When I think if they saw our world, they would probably just want air conditioning and a toothbrush. But in all seriousness, we live in a completely different world now. So let's stop worrying about what happened 300-400 years ago, and let's just start focusing on making this world livable, making this world sustainable for our kids. So that's me. That's my soapbox. Just know that I'll be spending the day with my family and appreciating their time, and maybe cracking a couple beers. So that's it. Everyone, take care of each other. Stop worrying about being right. And stay low, my friends. Subscribe now at staylow.us. Join the squad at patreon.com/thefirefighterspodcast. We're powered by Righteous Media.
Powered by Righteous Media.